Brenda Clement from
Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the April 13th, 2022 meeting of the Intergovernmental Committee. This meeting is being offered telephonically and in person for committee meeting members. Let me ask CJ Rotella to provide information on the telephonic meeting.
Good morning. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for your review at Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. Except for the Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Board of Commissioners, and specific Rhode Island Housing staffs, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the commissioners and participating staff to mute your telephone if you are not speaking. During the meeting, if anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. Corinne Myers, General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide additional information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Corinne Myers speaking. Members of the public can visit the RA Housing website to view today's agenda and related information. This meeting is being held in person, with additional telephonic access being provided to the public. If the teleconference portion is interrupted for any reason, we will stop the meeting until audio is restored. Chairman of the Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Stephen McAllister, will preside at today's meeting. Commissioners and staff, when you speak during the meeting, please state your name for the benefit of others listening in or accessing the recording at a later time. Please mute your telephone or computer to minimize any background noise. And with that, I will turn it over to Committee Chairman McAllister to call the meeting to order.
Thank you very much and welcome everyone. I call the RI Housing Intergovernmental Relations Committee to order. And Carol, if you'll call the roll.
Yes, certainly. Thank you. Commissioner Stephen McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Leanne Byrne.
Present.
The roll call is complete. Good
Thank
job.
You very much. All right, Amy, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Steve. So it's a busy year for housing. I have given you a little bit of an overview here of what's in the budget and some of the top priority bills. So I'll just go through those, and you guys can jump in with any questions that you might have. The governor proposed some really historic investments in housing in his FY 2023 budget, and that's really the allocation of the state's fiscal recovery funds. He requested that $250 million of those funds be dedicated to housing or homelessness programs, the bulk of which are proposed to be administered by Rhode Island Housing. So the pots that he has proposed that would be within Rhode Island Housing's administration are a $90 million affordable housing development fund. $15 million of that was already approved in December by the General Assembly and is currently out to RFP. A $25 million site acquisition program for the acquisition of affordable housing, of sites to be developed as affordable housing. $12 million of that was already approved back in December. We are accepting those applications currently on a rolling basis. $50 million for a new down payment assistance program, which would provide $17,500 in down payment assistance to first-time home buyers statewide. $20 million for a middle-income housing program available to support rental housing for families earning up to 100% of area median income, building off of Rhode Island Housing's workforce housing program. $10 million for pre-development for affordable housing developments, and $25 million for a community revitalization program, which builds off of the ARP program that we currently administer for the Housing Bond Fund. In addition to that, there's $30 million in homeless-focused programs that will be operated by the Office of Housing and Community Development, if funded. That includes $1.5 million for pre-development and capacity building, 21.5 million for sort of housing navigation, behavioral health stabilization services, and 5 million for homeless infrastructure, which is focused on acquisition, construction, temporary permanent shelter, and our housing-based solutions and wraparound services. Also $2 million for a statewide housing plan. So those are the funding proposals that are in the budget. The House and Senate Finance Committee have heard the housing-related provisions and expect that discussion around the budget and the allocation of those funds to heat up once the General Assembly gets back from its spring break next week. Does anybody have any questions on the funding side?
Can you speak a little bit to, this is Leanne, can you speak a little bit to the time horizons for all these projects? So presumably, even if they are all included in the governor's FY23 budget, they're intended to be
spent over multiple
years. Can you speak to whether some of those are front-loaded in some way or how those are envisioned?
Well, there's federal requirements as,
right,
as well.
Right. So there's obligation, or I believe the obligation date is by the end of 2024. The expenditure date is the end of 2026. And so some of these things are intended to be front-loaded, particularly things like pre-development, site acquisition, like the development stuff, things that will have a longer timeline, so you want to get those things funded up front, or else they're the beginning step for something that will go out over the long term.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things would happen probably more over a more even timeline, like down payment assistance. You know, when you make that award, that is the expenditure. So that can happen really right through the time frame.
And we're coordinating with Deputy Secretary Saul and the folks at OHCD,
mm-hmm,
and the Commerce Corp. So a lot of that schedule will be driven by, you know, developing what the program outline looks like and then setting dates that works for everyone to issue the RFPs.
I have another question, if that's okay.
Yep.
The homelessness infrastructure piece, I know that is being managed by the Office of Housing and Community Development, so feel free to defer, but is the intention for that to be targeted at a kind of permanent winter shelter solution, or is it just shelter capacity and system capacity generally?
I would have to defer to,
okay,
we haven't dove into that one as much. OHCD, Mike Tondra, I think, has been working with the Deputy Secretary more deeply on the homeless-related programs.
Thank you.
Yep.
And for the middle income housing, what falls in the middle income?
It's up to 100% AMI, so it would probably be in that 80 to 100% range.
Okay. All right. In for the area or for the state, where do they get that number?
For our program,
area median income,
right?
Area median income.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So a little bit different in Newport County versus Providence County.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So on the legislative side, we're currently tracking about 200 bills, which is a lot, and there's a lot of interest in housing and addressing barriers to housing development. So in looking at the bills that we are actually putting forward as priority legislation, I mentioned this to Leah before we started, we really looked to bills that are impactful, that affect our ability to carry out our mission, and have a decent chance of moving forward this year. So on the support side, we are supporting legislation introduced by Senator Oyer and Representative Felix that would require landlords to submit their portion of a rent relief application before filing an eviction for non-payment. Senator McCaffrey and Representative Lima have introduced legislation that would streamline the planning board and zoning board process, and at our request expanded that. The House bill has expanded that to include the State Housing Appeals Board, and we hope to modify the Senate bill to do the same. Senator Coleman and Representative Ackerman have introduced legislation around accessory dwelling units, Rhode Island Housing was part of a subgroup of the Low and Moderate Income Housing Commission that looked at this issue and at some guidelines provided by AARP, and feel that that legislation could help to streamline the process of making ADUs available in the state. Senator Oyer, Rep. Cortgren have introduced legislation around the Open Meetings Act to continue to allow hybrid meetings. However, that is time restricted to expire on July 1st. Not clear if that's going to move. Bia has introduced legislation that would give Rhode Island Housing basically a second right of refusal for state-owned properties to look at their potential reuse as affordable housing. Rep. Speakman has introduced legislation that would help to streamline the comprehensive permit and appeals process, and also provide some alternates on the board to help with quorum issues. And Rep. Speakman has also introduced legislation that would give the HRC responsibility for overseeing approved monitoring agents, which is especially important for municipally subsidized affordable housing. On the opposition side, we are opposing the legislation that has periodically been introduced and has been introduced again that would raise the 8% rate on affordable apartments. And Senator Quezada is introducing one version of that. Senator Quezada has also introduced legislation again this year, which would take a portion of the fee Rhode Island Housing receives for foreclosure mediation and divert that to provide funding to Rhode Island Legal Services. And Senator Morgan has introduced legislation again that qualifies mobile and manufactured homes as affordable housing without them being restricted.
Amy, there's a bill that was brought to our attention in Warwick that would prohibit building of single family homes and things. Where's that stand?
So that's not a bill that we are taking a position on. It actually doesn't prohibit single family zoning. It just doesn't allow you to prohibit certain kinds of housing, like duplexes or triplexes in communities of a certain size. However, we are not taking a position on that bill. I would be very surprised if it goes anywhere.
Okay. Just so you know, the Warwick came out against it, the city council, the president of the city council. We came out against it, and we think it's an overreach on, you know, local zoning laws and stuff like that. So if that does start to move forward, I've also heard also it's not going anywhere, but if it does, if you could flag that for me,
yep.
I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
In terms of bills that we are seeking to amend, there are a number of bills that were part of the package of housing bills that the speaker introduced earlier this session that we are seeking to amend. One introduced by Rep. Corvese. Well, I'm going to combine these because there's a lot of overlap actually between these provisions and the different bills. But basically, there are a number of bills that direct Rhode Island Housing, statewide planning, the Department of Education, you know, different parties in these different bills. Rhode Island Housing is in really each of them to report on specific information to the General Assembly and the Governor's Office twice a year. And some of the things that they are requesting, like they are requesting statewide planning provide information on all of the low and moderate income units in the state and their availability, that is something Rhode Island Housing does produce, the annual low and moderate income housing. So some things we're already producing. Some things are already available on federal sites. Some things that they are requesting that we provide information on, we don't have access to the information, so we're asking that if they're going to ask us to report on those things, that they need to direct the bodies that have that information to provide it to us. And in some areas, we just need to get clarification from them about what exactly they're looking for. So those are really the amendments. These are all reporting bills generally, and we just need to tighten those up a little bit. And then there's also legislation around net metering systems that we are in conversations about how we can amend to work in affordable developments in terms of being able to share credits from, the credits that come in from excess power being generated by the community net metering systems to share with tenants. So we're in conversations about how that might be able to be amended to serve the residents in affordable developments. So that is the list of the bills that we are taking a position on. We are also continuing to serve on the Low and Moderate Income Housing Commission, and Jim Thorson sits for Rhode Island Housing on the Land Use Commission, which are both looking at opportunities to further remove barriers to affordable housing development and improve the Low and Moderate Income Housing Act. So there may be additional legislation or strategies that come out of those commissions as well.
What keeps you up, at the end of session, there's always one or two housing bills that pops up and, we're doing a mad scramble. What if you had your predicting glasses on, what does that look like this
year? I'm worried about the 8% bill.
Yes. It's a constant annual challenge. Because it could be financially devastating to developments across the state.
And it seems to have more interest this year than it has had in the past. So that one is a real concern. And it's one of those bills that if it's going to move, it moves in the last month of the session. So that's always problematic.
And we'll keep you updated. We'll ensure that it's in the ED report for the something is pressing or something is urgently come up, Amy will provide information to the board on what's happening.
Yeah, I remember we did some calls last year or 2 years ago,
yeah.
Trying to get some things lined up at the end. So
yeah.
We're definitely available for that.
Are there any other questions you have on the bills that we're taking a position on?
I have just sort of a general question related to the work of the LMIH Commission and the Land Use Commission and the bills that have been introduced so far. Do you feel like the recommendations in the bills or the proposals in the bills are lining up to the recommendations that seem to be coming out of the commissions? Is there some places where there's significant mismatch?
So the speaker's package was not a recommendation of the commission.
Okay.
Commission members didn't get around the table and say, these are the things that we want to do. I think my understanding is that the bills came in part out of some of the presentations to the commission and some of the ideas that came up as issues that
sure.
were raised at the commission, and also some commission members, Rhode Island Housing included, submitted recommendations on specific things that ended up in some of these bills. And some of the bills, as I mentioned, with the things around amendments, need some work. They're they need to be tightened up. They need to be edited a little bit to achieve the goals that I think that they're trying to achieve. So, and I think that it's still relatively early in the process. I don't know that they've really dove into the part of the conversation about specific legislative recommendations, and I know that both of the commissions have extended their timeline so that they will.
Yeah, do you remember when they're due to report?
Into next year now.
Okay.
Yeah? Any other questions? I also shared, if I could just share with you, the federal recommendations we were down in D.C. Last month, talking to the congressional delegation, so I just wanted to share with you the legislative recommendations that we shared with them. The front page is really highlighting the work that we've been doing over the last year, particularly, obviously our mortgage assistance and the development activities, and the rental programs that we offer, but also the COVID assistance that has really taken up a lot of our work this year. But in terms of the legislative priorities, the biggest stuff that we are focused on right now and spoke with the delegation about when we were down there are some issues with regard to the low-income housing tax credit program. So one issue is that there was a boost in the allocation of low-income housing tax credits that we were operating under for the last 3 years, 12.5% boost. So we had 12.5% more credits to give out over the last 3 years. That expired at the end of last year. And I think there have been a number of vehicles that folks have been trying to get that on, and nationally we've been working with NCSHA, but it just hasn't happened to date. Nothing has pulled through. So we really were talking with the delegation about what the opportunities can be to restore our credit allocation back to what we have been. We'd love to expand it, but at least get us back to what we've been the last 3 years. The second issue is around the tax credits is that due to the structure of the tax credit program and the structure of the state fiscal recovery funds, they don't work well together. It's very difficult to leverage low-income housing tax credits with SFRF dollars. And the way we maximize housing production and the utilization of the federal resources we have is to combine those two. And so there is legislation that has been crafted that we're urging the delegation to get on board and with and try to move forward that would resolve that conflict, basically, and allow SFRF dollars to really be used effectively with low-income housing tax credits. And then the last thing is with the tax credits is to pass the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act, which would actually provide a significant increase in our allocation of tax credits while streamlining the program and making it work more effectively. The other things that we have in our priorities are things that we usually promote, maintaining the tax-exempt status of mortgage revenue bonds, which we use for single-family as well as the multifamily mortgages, as well as appropriations for the programs that we use to do our work. And also Build Back Better. I'm sure we've all heard the conversations around the Build Back Better Act. Doesn't seem to be going anywhere at the moment, but there's a lot of conversations about if that package can be broken up. Has a lot of really historic investments in it that would make a huge difference if it were able to move forward. It's just not clear at this point what the path is. So happy to answer any questions on the federal side if you have any.
Sure. Probably, like you said, break that up, give it a new name, you know.
I just have a quick question about the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act. The increase in the credit cap, is that permanent or time limited?
I think it would depend on the package that it was. So, like, there's versions of it in the Affordable Housing Credit Improvement Act, in the Build Back Better Act, and that was one of the conversations about, you know, when they score it.
How long can they?
Yeah.
I ask because
the goal,
you know, obviously there was, we have now faced this cliff and we see what the consequences, and so 50% increase is so significant that to then, like, have a similar cliff at such a great drop would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal is always to be permanent.
Sure.
But it's part of the
ability to actually do it.
Yep, understood.
We are going to be very spoiled with all of the federal dollars for production and down payment assistance that we would have access to. Yeah.
And that is all I have.
Well, that's a lot.
And I would say, actually, that there's a QRL code here that if you go to that, that takes you to the more expanded version. This is a collapsed version of the federal brief, but there's more at that site if you want to go check it out.
Absolutely. So I'm not at the State House. Are they still planning on trying to get out as early as possible?
have the momentum, yeah.
It's an election year, and
yeah.
But they've got a lot of work still to go,
mm-hmm.
So we shall see.
Very nice. Leanne, anything else?
Not for this meeting, but in a future meeting, it would be interesting, I think, to hear some of the impacts of the recent legislative priorities that have passed, like how is it going with enforcement of source of income, discrimination prevention, and what has been the impact so far of the real estate transfer tax, like how much are we actually netting, like just, and it doesn't have to be in a high level or a lot of detail, but just at a high level would be interesting to kind of hear.
Mm-hmm.
Are those things working?
Yeah.
I mean, traditionally, the next meeting of this committee is after the session.
Okay.
So maybe we could build that into a conversation after the session.
That would be great.
And how are you tracking metrics on income, or who is tracking metrics on that?
So the, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting to say my name when I talk, Amy. So appeals would go to the Commission on Human Rights.
I see.
If there is a, an action that is taken. Interestingly, the ones that I have heard about so far are actually around rent relief, not Section 8. And obviously, folks think about the vouchers as being
mm-hmm.
As being the thing that might cause those to be brought. But I think so far, at least the ones that I have heard about so far, have been related to rent relief.
Not surprising, no.
And the
given the temporary nature of that assistance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can certainly do that.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
So we can officially adjourn?
Yes. Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. Thank you very much.
A motion and a second. This is Corinne Myers. If you're in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye. If you're opposed, say nay.
Aye.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.